What lies ahead for our planet? Find out on an extraordinary trip with the Wall Street Journal and National Geographic Expeditions. Book now at natgeoexpeditions.com/WSJ or call 888-205-5621.
Here's your money briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen at the Wall Street Journal in New York. A car loan is among the biggest monthly expenses for most Americans, and for some, paying it off can be a struggle. Some car dealers have a surprising solution. They tell the owner to stop making payments.
So they say, you know what? We'll sell you a new car. We'll make the sale. But this car that you're trying to trade in or that you're having difficulty with the loan payments on, we're not going to buy this car back. Instead, why don't you just sort of call the lender associated with that car and sort of get it off your plate and just tell them to come and repossess it?
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Anna Maria Andriotis. She and reporter Ben Eisen will explain why car dealers are recommending this, and if you take the advice, how it could affect your credit score. That's next.
For those fortunate enough to help the person who has always been their hero, AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Back in December, we told you about how some car dealers were inflating borrowers' reported income to help them secure a car loan. Well, now Wall Street Journal reporters Anna Maria Andriotis and Ben Eisen are back to discuss more tactics being used by car dealers. This time, they're encouraging struggling borrowers to stop making their payments altogether. So Anna Maria and Ben, this seems very counterintuitive. Why would a car dealer recommend this?
So car dealers are obviously in the business of selling cars. That's the bottom line for them. There are many times when dealers just don't want to take a car back. What does that mean? Unless you're buying a car for the first time and they don't have an existing one, oftentimes consumers will look to maybe buy a car when they already have one. And it's sort of this trade-in process that is pretty common in the industry. I have a car, dealer, I want to buy another car. Will you take my car and I'll buy another car in place of it? The trade-in. There are some reasons why dealers won't want to take back that car. Oftentimes, it boils down to the car won't essentially result in a profit for the dealership. So they say, you know what? We'll sell you a new car. We'll make the sale. But this car that you're trying to trade in or that you're having difficulty with the loan payments on, we're not going to buy this car back. Instead, why don't you just sort of call the lender associated with that car and sort of get it off your plate and just tell them to come and repossess it. So it sounds complicated.
Repossess it.
So we'll get into all of this. It sounds complicated. But the bottom line is that dealerships can choose which cars they will take back and which ones they won't. And if a dealership finds that the car for some reason would be unprofitable or undesirable for them to take back, the solution that they'll give to the consumer is just call up the lender who you're paying that loan on that car for and just tell them to come take it back.
So the customer stops making payments, the car's repossessed. Wouldn't this hack away at their credit rating?
So this is where Ben and I found the story to be really interesting, because the strategy that's being used is a very, on some levels, a very smart one. If a dealership is, you know, just looking to make another sale, when the dealer tells the consumer, just kick this car back to your lender, you know, tell them to come repossess it. Before the consumer actually does that, the day that the consumer is in the dealership, they're told, okay, we're not going to do this trade-in, but today we will sell you a new car with a new loan. And after we've done all of that, call the lender on your original car and tell them to repossess it. It's kind of genius in some ways, right? Because here's how it works. The dealership will go forward with the loan application process for that car that they're trying to sell you, right? The lenders that are reviewing your credit report, your credit score, guess what? That repossession hasn't happened yet. It's not reflected on your credit report.
Okay.
So all that a lender will see when you are applying for the loan for that new car that you're buying is that you have an outstanding loan with a different lender.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, many people in the U.S. have more than one car, and therefore more than one car loan. So that really isn't a red flag, right? So what the lender is seeing is a loan application submitted by a dealership where they pull up the person's credit report and they see, oh, this person has another car loan, fine. They're making those payments, fine. We'll approve them for a loan for this new car they're trying to buy. So nothing on that credit report suggests a repossession has happened. So the lender approves the person for that next car that they're buying. And then that person goes home, essentially with two cars, the car that they wanted to trade in and the new car that they've bought. And they call the lender on the previous, on the original car, and that's when the repossession occurs.
But a repossession would be the same kind of blemish, whether it's part of this process or not. Wouldn't that hurt the consumer down the line?
Yes. I mean, no doubt about it. It will hurt the consumer, the people we spoke with who went through this whole process, their credit reports. It shows essentially that the loans were written off as a loss by the lender, that the person in many cases still has a balance with that loan, the car, which was repossessed. The ramifications for the consumer are pretty severe.
You spoke with a woman who was struggling to pay off her Kia Soul, went through this process, and what happened to her credit rating?
Her credit score plummeted. Her credit report shows that the Kia, the loan that was given to her for that Kia, it was written off as a loss by the lender. She still owes a balance on it. She's having difficulty even changing apartments. She's trying to find a new apartment, and she can't because the landlords pull her credit report. They see this debt. They see that it was charged off. The credit score was impacted. So again, the ramifications of this can be pretty severe, and this is why, you know, Ben and I basically thought this is an important situation to look into, because the ultimate winner here, really the only possible winner with what we looked into, is the dealership. Because you have the consumer whose credit score is just hit hard. You have the lender that's dealing with loan losses from it. The repercussions of this are pretty widespread.
Now, Ben, does this happen a lot at dealerships?
It's something that we've seen cases of more and more over the last few years. You talk to consumer lawyers who handle a lot of auto loan lawsuits and such, and they really have seen more of these cases. One thing that I think is important to note is just really this is very much a case of short-term thinking when you think about how dealerships go about it, right? Because they are putting a consumer in a very bad situation, and they might not be able to come back and buy a car down the line. And then you're putting the lender in a bad situation, and if things unravel, which they may or they may not, it could impact your relationship with the lender as well. The lender could pull financing. So it's important to be clear that it's not that like this happens in every dealership, but really when you do see dealerships where it's happening, it's kind of an open secret is what we've been told.
So the dealers get to boost their sales numbers through this process. Do the lenders know that this is going on?
Pretty much most of the lenders who we spoke with for this article said that they were unaware of the strategy. We spoke with a number of people and asked them, what were the lenders involved in your situation? So we went to those lenders as well, and they were not aware either. So we're talking about some pretty big banks that we spoke with that were unaware of it and actually wanted to know more about it. And one of the banks shared some interesting insight into why lenders might not catch on to this process. Dealerships generally pull financing offers from a bunch of different lenders, right? Banks, credit unions, non-bank lenders. A dealership can have dozens of lenders they're pulling offers from. If a dealership does this sort of thing with one lender and then jumps to do it with another lender and then another lender in, let's say, its bucket of like two dozen lenders that they're rotating through, it could take a while before one lender identifies, wait a minute, what's going on here?
Oh, okay.
And when a lender does find out about something like this, they will typically pull their financing. And that we have seen that in some of these cases where a dealership has been forced to shut down because the lenders pull financing with these fraud cases generally. But it can take a very long time for someone to catch on. There's just sort of generally speaking, there's a lot of cheap credit flooding into the auto market these days. And lenders are almost kind of tripping on top of each other to offer loans to buyers. So when you see that, you do have a lot of dealerships have a lot of access to be able to get these loans for borrowers, and they could rotate through them. There's all sorts of things that can go on.
What's the threshold for putting a borrower through this process? Is it how far they are in their loan schedule when they're struggling, or is it just sort of, is there no pattern to it?
Well, there are two types of consumers that we have found are often impacted by this strategy. One are people who can't afford their loans. And oftentimes, unfortunately, unfortunately, what happens is that when they sign up for a loan to buy a car and they realize from the get-go at the dealership's office that this is something that I can't really afford or won't be able to afford very long, the dealership will tell them, well, don't worry about it. You know, make the first few months of payments on this. Your credit will improve from it. And come back and we'll rework the loan, you know, which would suggest a refi, right, lowering your monthly payments. The person goes back to the dealership after those few months pass and they say, hi, I'm back. Can you please help me now? And the dealership tells them, actually, no, we can't. Just give this car back to the lender. We'll sell you another one today. Now, the other strategy is when somebody, it's not so much a matter of not being able to pay their loan, but, you know, they've had the car and they're looking for another car. They want to trade it in and they go to the dealership. It's a pretty typical strategy for a consumer, you know, the trade in. And the dealership just says, no, we're not going to trade in. We'll sell you another car, kick this other car that you have right now back to the lender. And so what ultimately is playing out here is that there are, as Ben said, with all the sort of cheap sort of credit that's out there, affordable credit, easy access to credit that's out there, we have sort of reached a point where you have many consumers who owe more on their cars than they are worth. And the dealerships look at this and say, we don't really want to deal with this. Let's just sort of kick this thing back to the lender. And then you have people who, because of easy access to credit, have gotten loans they can't afford. So if anything, this situation that we're talking about here is almost like a result of this sort of many years now of easy access to credit.
This puts the consumer in a really bad spot. I mean, it's a lot of peace of mind. It's a lot of just insurance of being able to get loans later on down the line just to get a new car. Where's the consumer protection in all this? Is the government stepping in and saying, hey, hold on, time out, everybody?
So one interesting facet of this is that when the CFPB was created, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the dealerships did a lot of lobbying, and they were actually carved out from oversight under Consumer Financial Protection. They are subject to the oversight of FTC and all of the state regulators, but they did score a big win there. So there's that. And also on the consumer front, I would just note sort of one separate aspect, which is that a lot of these cases do really start with consumers making bad decisions, whether it's that there's a bit of naivete or they just do not have great understanding of finance and personal finance. That said,
when you bring a repo man into the matter, it puts a chill down people's spine, I would imagine.
But what Ben just said is important because people need to know that a dealership is not a lender. There is no such thing as a dealership being able to refinance your loan, in most cases at least, because that requires a lender willing to do that, not a dealership. But because most financing, car financing nowadays, occurs through the dealership, right? Most people go to the dealership, they find the car, then they go into the dealership's financing office and they get a loan. There's this assumption, and I don't necessarily, you know, I don't blame anybody here, but there is this assumption that among consumers, many consumers, that dealership equals lender, mm-hmm. because the financing is often arranged in there.
All right. That's Wall Street Journal reporters Anna Maria Andriotis and Ben Eisen with us. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen in New York for The Wall Street Journal.